It's been a horrific week of violence in our country. Today, we mourn five police officers killed last night in Dallas during an otherwise peaceful protest. Here's President Obama earlier this morning.
I believe that I speak for every single American when I say that we are horrified over these events and that we stand united with the people and the police department in Dallas.
That protest was the result of two other deaths this week of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile, black men shot and killed by police. Today, we're reacting to all of this. How are you feeling? How are you trying to make sense of this? And where do we go from here? Call us at 1-800-222-9455 or tweet to 21st Show. Later, what do you need to know if you're headed to an area with the Zika virus?
No one in the population has had the disease before, so nobody is immune to it.
That's Donald McNeil Jr. on Fresh Air. The New York Times reporter literally just wrote the book on Zika, and he's joining us. That's all this hour on the 21st. Stay with us. I'm Nyla Boodoo. You're listening to The 21st. It's really tough to know what to say this morning as we're looking at the events that have happened this past week in our country. Last night, five police officers were killed, 12 others shot in Dallas. It happened during an otherwise peaceful event of people who had come out to protest the deaths of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile, two men who were fatally shot by police officers early this week. This hour, we're going to be talking about all of this with activists, journalists, our elected officials, but we want you listening to join the conversation as well. What are you feeling right now? What are your thoughts? This is a time I think it's really helpful for us to come together and talk about it. That's why we're on the air. That's why we have this show. Our phone number for you to join us is 1-800-222-9455. It's 1-800-222-9455. You can also tweet to 21st Show. Our handle is 21stshow. We wanted to start with a voice from our local law enforcement here in Illinois. Brian Fengel is the chief of the Bartonville Police Department. That's just outside Peoria. He's also vice president of the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police. Chief, thanks for joining us. I'm sorry that it's under these circumstances.
Yeah, and I'd just like to say thank you for having me today.
Thank you for taking the time. Chief Fengel, what was your reaction when you first heard yesterday evening about what was happening?
You know, I was shocked after I had heard the information come out, you know, about the shooting. We'd been talking prior to that about the other two shootings that's happened throughout the country, and all of a sudden it shifted.
What's the conversation you're having with your officers this morning?
I think what we're having, the conversations, the ones I've talked to, we've discussed officer safety. The top priority is going home to your families and friends, and just being vigilant out there. It's a trying time throughout the country and also in the state of Illinois. We want everybody to be safe. No one likes to see this tragedy at all.
And I think the horrifying part of this also is the Dallas police chief saying this morning that the Dallas police chief is saying that the shooter wanted to kill white police officers in particular. And when police are targeted like that, and obviously that wasn't here, that was in Dallas, does that change the way you're preparing for your day or how officers are approaching what they do?
Well, I think you have to look at it. Police work is a very dangerous job. Officers, firemen, deputies throughout the state. I mean, law enforcement officials, public safety, I mean, they run into danger per se. You know, look at what happened down there. It was a peaceful protest, nothing going on, and in a split second, look what happens. It turns into tragedy, an active shooter situation. No one knows. Officers are responding, coming to the scene, not knowing what they're getting into, but they're not running away from it. They're running into it to try to protect life of other people.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask you about, of that. Well, we did see that last night. We saw in action police officers were running towards the shooting to protect the protesters. For you, I think what you're saying, the training that police officers, properly trained police officers, will fall back on?
Yeah, that's what we train all the time in active shooters. We train in the use of force. And that is the only thing that you can rely on and fall back on is your training. If you're well trained, then it comes second nature to you. It's like repetitive training. Anything you do repetitively will help you when the situation arises. So that is what we have. And, you know, over the years, we've increased training. And the training is necessary to be effective. And will your training fit every situation? No, but it will definitely help.
Chief Engel, so much of this, I think, can devolve, and unfortunately we saw a little of this yesterday evening, and I'm imagining we will continue to see this devolve into sort of a us versus them discussion. Or what do you want our listeners to know about what happened yesterday evening? How are you putting this in context?
Well, we police officers throughout the state, we don't look at it as that, us versus them. We're there to protect people, okay? And that is our main goal. If a situation arises, we go there. We want to resolve it peacefully. We don't want to resolve it in a violent manner. So I think people need to understand that. And I think the best line of defense is sit down prior to these events happening, like we are doing with the state NAACP, building relationships with people so they understand how we react and we understand how they react and their feelings. And every community is different in Illinois. There's no one community the same. So each community has to know what they need to do, who they need to reach out to, and hopefully this can be avoided.
Thank you for taking the time. I know it's a very busy time for you. Brian Fengel is chief of the Bartonville Police Department. He's also vice president of the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police. Thanks, Chief.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
We're reacting this morning to the violence that's happened this week across our country. Illinois Governor Rauner issued this statement this morning calling the attack on Dallas police officers outrageous. He said the men and women who work every day to protect everyone, including those exercising their rights to free speech, deserve our respect and support. The shootings in Louisiana and Minnesota that led to last night's protests are deeply distressing. All of these events speak to the lack of unity and trust in many of our communities and underscores the urgency in addressing that lack of trust. Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings is inviting Americans nationwide to offer their prayers and thoughts today at noon. That's when, in Dallas's Thanksgiving Square, there'll be a special multi-faith unity prayer service. What are you thinking? How are you reacting? We're taking your calls and comments. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. You can also tweet to 21st Show. Joining us now, Aaron Ammons has led conversations about violence, police, and race for years. He's an alderman on the Urbana City Council and joins us by phone now from the Champaign-Urbana area. Hello, Alderman. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Good morning to you as well.
Good morning. I also want to welcome Gerard McClendon, a veteran journalist. He's a host of Counterpoint on Lakeshore Public Media and joins us on the line from the Chicagoland area. Gerard, thanks for coming back on the 21st.
It's good to be here. Terrible circumstance.
But that's what I wanted to start by asking both of you. Gerard, what was your reaction when you heard about what happened in Dallas?
Oh, man, it was a tough day because I was on television a few times yesterday, and I had mentioned that the two prior shootings of police officers shooting the young man, you know, I had called that a new millennium lynching in a high-tech social media world where everything's on Facebook now. You got Facebook Live, and you're actually seeing things develop as they happen. But the irony comes with the shooting in Dallas. You know, here we have people who have sworn to serve and protect, and then we have a shooter or shooters shooting the serve and protectors, you know, and that it doesn't get any worse than that. When the irony of someone that's trying to protect you at a protest, they unload fire on them. You know, I watched the live coverage all last night and just was in total and utter disbelief.
Gerard, thanks for saying shooter or shooters. I should point out to our listeners, this is a really fast-moving story. We don't know all the details of it yet. I think it's important in our place in the media to point out that this just happened and we're still learning the details of it, and you're going to hear lots of things. There's already been lots of mistakes already made in reporting in the past 12 hours, so thanks for saying that. Alderman Ammons, what about you? What was your reaction to yesterday evening?
Well, yesterday evening, of course, comes in the context of everything that had happened, for decades before that, and of course the killing of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile by police, which many who have viewed that see these as crimes against citizens. And so, even as I think about the families of these officers who were killed in the line of duty, and certainly my heart goes out to any family member who has to grieve the loss of their loved ones. But again, that's all in the context of the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of families who have lost their young sons at the hands of police killings, whether it's Laquan McDonald, Kewan Carrington, Alton Sterling, or the countless other names that we can share. I don't want to see the senseless loss of life, period. So, of course, as a human being, my heart goes out to anyone who has been who has to deal with the loss of their loved ones. But what you said about my record and what I have been advocating for years in Champaign and Urbana as an activist is that, you know, we have to understand that if we don't deal with the core issues of why people feel or why Black people feel the way that we feel, then that repression, wherever there's repression, there's going to be resistance. And so I think we would be doing a disservice to the officers and to the American people who are listening if we don't take into consideration that there was a context that led up to what happened. Because those snipers, from my understanding, were not shooting at the protesters, right? So we need to take into consideration that there's a very real issue that the country has to deal with, and that President Obama spoke to about the issues of officers who are giving, who are carrying out a system of repression through their actions when they are killing or abusing innocent citizens, primarily African Americans.
So, Alderman, it sounds like you're saying you are not surprised that police officers have become a target. Am I incorrect? And am I hearing you correctly?
Well, I think the term target is a harsh word to use. What I'm saying very clearly is that anyone who is a part of and a arm of the repression is seen in the eyes of those who are repressed as a part of that repression, right? So I don't think it's hard for people to logically conclude that there would be resistance to that type of what people are seeing as systemic and state-sanctioned violence against African-American men. I don't think that's surprising. It shouldn't be surprising to anyone.
Yeah. Gerard, it sounds like you want to. Go ahead, Gerard.
Yeah, it's a climate of fear, you know, and anytime you have a rising distrust of the system, of law enforcement, of the judicial system, and when you look at African-Americans in some neighborhoods and in some low-income areas being sometimes called part of the permanent underclass, that's going to create a crucible that is going to be under intense heat. So, you know, we feel for the police officers. There's volatility and complexity in that job, you know. But Martin Luther King, you know, said it best. He said a riot is the language of the unheard. And even though there was no riot last night, there was a peaceful protest. You know, the rioting begins with a shooter or shooters who feel that they have to kill innocent cops, you know, which is frustrating to me. You know, things could possibly get worse. You know, what's interesting is the film Birth of a Nation, not the original film, but there's a brand new film.
The one that's coming out in a couple months. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And it basically details and kind of catalogs Nat Turner's slave uprising and revolt. you know, of killing white people. And so, you know, it's very, very complex. But I think what's going to come out of this, hopefully something good will come out of this. Hopefully we'll get a ban on assault weapons, finally. You know, you thought it would have happened mm-hmm. with the children, San. You thought it would have happened with the church. But this Dallas incident, I mean, this is the lowest of the low. And if our Congress can't get it together, I'm watching the news last night hearing these automatic rounds just tapping. And I'm like, why does a civilian have that weapon and that and those armaments?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so many issues that both of you all have brought up here. There's the gun issue. There's so many different things of layers of this conversation. We've got about a minute before we take a break. Alderman, I just want to ask you about one particular thing about this. Do you think that, you know, the Dallas police have been very made clear that if whether it's one or two, we don't know how many people were involved with this, that they did not seem to have connections with the Black Lives Matter movement. Do you think this changes the conversation that has been happening for the past 2-3 years around police violence in Black men?
Well, I do think that the I would even call it the brilliance of the nonviolent movement. I know some may disagree with that, but I do think the focus there was to make sure we didn't allow during that time, allow the issues to be pushed to the side and the focus to be put on violence or on something else other than the issue itself. And so I do think that this is going to create a more of a dual approach in looking at the violence that's taking place. And maybe the conversation goes into gun violence and the AR-15, and then swept under the rug will be the dehumanization and the murdering of African American men.
Alderman, I'm going to stop you there. We're going to pick up this conversation and get into those nuances in just a minute before we take a break. You're listening to The 21st. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. This morning, we're mourning the loss of 5 police officers in Texas. They were shot during a protest that was about other deaths. 2 Black men, Alton Sterling and Philando Castile, who were shot and killed by police earlier this week in Louisiana and Minnesota. This morning here in Illinois, we're reacting to this horrific week of violence in our country. On the line with me from the Champaign-Urbana area, Alderman from the city of Urbana, Aaron Ammons. From the Chicagoland area, Gerard McClendon is the host of Counterpoint on Lakeshore Public Media, and they're both talking with me. We would love to hear your reactions, your thoughts, as we're talking about this and having sort of the immediate reaction as well as processing everything. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. 1-800-222-9455. Alderman, just before the break, you were talking about, we were kind of peeling back. This is a really difficult conversation, and this is why this is such a huge problem, I imagine, because of how many layers of things, and there's so many different issues and problems that we're dealing with here. One thing I want to go back to, you said you're worried about the dehumanization, that being lost. Gerard, I'm thinking of you describing yesterday on Chicago television the 2 deaths that we saw this week of the young Black men, you describing them as sort of this high-tech lynching, the way that we're seeing all of this play out in social media as well. Alderman Ammons, what do you mean when you say you're worried about the dehumanization being lost?
Well, the focus of the young lady who videotaped her boyfriend, Philando Castile, being killed and watching the videotapes of watching Alton Sterling die in front of our eyes after being shot, I believe it reminded me of, and it reminded the world of what happened when the young children during the Children's March were being sprayed with water hoses and dogs being sicked on them by the police departments in Alabama. And I believe it was the type of moment that made everybody stop and pause and say, oh my goodness, what they have been saying for years and for decades is really real. And all of us know that when Dylan Roof or some other white male is being encountered by the police, their humanization and the fact that they are human beings is put forth, and it's a very patient dealing with them. But as we see in the case with dealing with young black males, that's not the case. And it, even as you came back from the break, what you said is this morning, we're mourning the loss of the five officers killed in Dallas in the wake of the two men that were killed by police earlier. You didn't say that we were mourning the deaths of those two people who were killed and the five officers. That's what I mean about the dehumanization that continues even today. And just if I might just go for a little bit further here, I was listening to the news yesterday morning, and I heard as they were giving an account of Abraham Lincoln and the accomplishments of Abraham Lincoln, Jennifer Roscoe's last statement was that, and also he freed the slaves. You see, it dawned on me, and maybe it'll dawn on some of the listeners now, slaves. No, we were, Africans were enslaved, but we were never slaves. We never have been and never will be slaves. That is a title that has been put upon us, but human beings are not slaves. And so when she said he freed the slaves, it reminded me that our vernacular, our curriculums are still depicting African Americans and African people as three-fifths of a human being. And that dehumanization is the dehumanization that I'm speaking of. And it's so ingrained within the American fabric that we don't even hear it when we say it sometimes.
Thanks for that, Alderman. Gerard, go ahead.
Yeah, that's one. He's right on point. Captured Africans were enslaved, but they definitely were not slaves, as if they were actual property. You know, the three-fifths situation is horrifying because even to this day in 2016, you don't see as great an emphasis on black people who are killed as being full-fledged human beings. You know, and I think that the gentleman points that out eloquently. You know, the news doesn't place as great an emphasis on the life of black men, especially if the black men are demonized. You know, if we didn't have the videotapes from the other day, who knows what the narrative would be?
Right.
Ultimately,
right.
We aren't choosing to be moral and caring. And there's a great divide in this country, and on a Tuesday, a person might say, well, race doesn't matter. But on Wednesday, someone's clearly delineating race, ethnicity, class, gender, place of origin. And so, you know, this country is schizophrenic. You know, it will embrace the Africans and African Americans who have done so much for it in entertainment, science, sports, medicine, education. But the minute a black person doesn't become a part of the exceptionality, then all black people become demonized. That's the burden that we have to bear. As a politician, the gentleman on the line, and as a college professor and talk show host, if we're in blue jeans and a T-shirt and we're on our cell phone on the corner, we're looked upon worse than a great white shark or a Norway rat. We are an African-American male, and our life is dispensable.
That's Gerard McClendon on the line with us as well. Alderman Aaron Ammons, he represents the city of Urbana. We want you to join the conversation. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to George in Champaign. Hi, George. Welcome to the 21st. What's your comment?
Two quick comments. First of all, I grieve for the loss of black men at the hands of rogue police officers or accidents, as well as the police officers in Dallas. But I think that, you know, one of the comments that you guys, that the speakers were making about how we treat black men. I mean, there's an epidemic in this country of black men dying to gun violence. I mean, they make up half the deaths, half the homicides in this country. And the overwhelming proportion, 91% or something, are at the hands of other black men. And nobody talks about that in that context. I mean, that's part of the context of what police officers are dealing with. So it's very, very difficult to put that in perspective. The second comment is in reference to the reference to automatic gunfire. And I don't know that it's been determined that there was an automatic weapon used. But I think we have to be careful in how we balance, the very difficult context. I mean, the Virginia Tech shooting where my son was at and fortunately was not affected. That shooter had pistols. He did not have you know, an AR-15 or a semi-automatic weapon.
So, George, it sounds like you're saying you don't want this to be a conversation about limiting guns, or we need to be careful about that. Is that what you're saying?
I think that there's a bigger context that sometimes doesn't get mentioned in the media. You know, I mean, there's a bigger violence issue in this country. I mean,
okay.
You know, the per capita death rate, you know, at because of handgun violence, you know, with black men in this country is astronomical. You know, we get compared to European nations all the time at, you know, 3.3%, depending on what statistics, or 3.3 per 100,000, what statistics you hear, somewhere as high as 5 per 100,000. You know, in the black community, it's like 15 per 100,000. I mean, that's...
George, yeah, thanks for that comment. I want to have Alderman Ammons, I wonder if you can respond to that in the sense of George saying he doesn't feel like there's enough conversation about... and obviously that's his perspective, that he doesn't feel there's enough conversation about violence within the black community. What are your thoughts on that, Alderman?
Well, I think that there's a lot of interracial violence that takes place within all ethnic groups. And I do think that there should be, and I have been a part of many conversations about how to address that. One of the things that we have to be very careful of when we get into these types of conversations is that this conversation is about state-sanctioned violence, about sworn officers who work on behalf of the people to serve and protect the people and who are killing hundreds, 200 to 300 black men a year or every 28 hours. That's what this particular conversation is about, and we should return to another conversation when we can focus on that. But I believe it certainly muddies the waters when we're talking about police and state-sanctioned violence versus when other citizens are committing crimes against one another.
I wanted to bring one more voice into this conversation. Tonight, there's a Black Lives Matter event that's planned for downtown Champaign. It's being organized in part by the duo Mother Nature. They're hip-hop artists who are activists and educators, and one half of that duo, Truth, joins us now. Hey, Truth, welcome to the 21st.
How you doing, Nyla? Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being with us. Thanks for taking the time. What did you originally plan for the event this evening in downtown Champaign? I saw the poster say Good Vibes Only.
Mm-hmm. Well, the name of Good Vibes Only pretty much came from a workshop event festival that we did a month or so ago with the youth based around hip-hop, and we just wanted to keep that theme going. So just naming Good Vibes Only, just giving our people a place to come and be able to just vent their feelings and frustrations and be able to discuss different issues that we want to talk about, as well as just building solidarity within our community for the most part of the event.
And after the events of yesterday evening, do you think that your focus has changed?
Well, we're definitely wanting to continue this on. We don't want this just to be one protest, one cipher, one event. We want this to continue on, to continue to build community amongst each other, because we feel that what we have right now is a lack of solidarity and a lack of us coming together and seeing our power as a unit. So once we get together and really start to understand that and break that down and figure out ways in which to bring our issues and stuff together and see it on a collective conscious, then we'll be able to more strategically plan out things for the near future that we can enact and to enable us to be more of a powerhouse in the fight for injustice and equality.
Truth, what were your thoughts yesterday evening when you saw that some police officers had been shot and then you learned that they had been killed, and this happened during or after the protests, a Black Lives Matter protest in Dallas?
Mm-hmm. It seems very peculiar to me that this would happen during this Black Lives Matter protest, and that this the way it's framed in the media right now, it's seeming that it's pointing to protesters and things of that nature. So it's, of course, a life being lost is always, you know, a detriment and something, you know, to be sad about. But it's like with the media being the way it is, it's hard for me to just look at something just one way and just see it as with such a horrible event. Like, it's so much underlying things that we don't know. So it's really hard for me to tell. But like initially, it was sadness, of course. But I'm not so sure what's the entirety of this story at the moment, just because it's so early on.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think everybody needs to remember that no one yet knows the details of what has happened, and it's too soon to say. But that said, given the fact, the timing of it, that it happened,
Right.
While this was happening, are you worried that this will take away from what the Black Lives Matter movement has been doing?
Well, I mean, things in the media have been trying to negatively disrupt the Black Lives Matter movement since its inception, to be honest. So this is just another thing that is going to, you know, make Black Lives Matter movement something to be looked down upon, something that people shouldn't support. But really, it's just another drop in the bucket. It'll happen if something else happens, and the BML is somewhere in connection with it to some degree. So it's something that's going to be happening until, you know, they totally dismantle BLM to begin with. So,
what's your hope for this evening? What would you like to see happen?
Oh, well, just to get our people together and just to have that community vibe and to get people to be able to feel somewhat safe. So we want to provide a space that is, you know, very open to, because it's definitely inclusive to all people going through the struggle. We know that this is just not affecting Black lives, but we are pointing this to our Black community members and our family out here. Because it is like this could easily have been my brother, my father, my uncle, my anybody that has been gunned down out here on these streets for no reason at all. So we just definitely want people to come together, feel safe, be able to discuss the issues that they have, and really just plan for the future on how we can fix this and make sure this starts to decrease and end at some point.
Can you give us the details of the event this evening?
The details that we're giving out to people is that it's in downtown Champaign at 6 p.m. If you come downtown, it's not that big of an area, so if you hear noise and people gathering, then just come and find us.
Thanks for joining us, Truth. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Alderman Ammons, we just have a few minutes left here as we wrap up this conversation, and I guess my question to you is, we just got about 2 minutes before the break, and then, Gerard, I'll go to you after the break. What conversation needs to happen at this point? What conversation do you want people to be having today?
Well, I think it's going to be, it's a couple of different conversations. And I believe as a father and as an organizer in this community, we have often talked about the importance of teaching our children the best way to deal with these encounters and how to survive this encounter. Is to still be respectful, know the law, know what, it's a very difficult piece because even from my perspective, I thought Philando Castile was doing just that. So we're going to continue to tell them to be respectful, to continue to try to comply with any lawful commands that the officers give, but to avoid any of these encounters if possible. And I do believe that there needs to be a conversation around whether it's at the federal level or at the state level, around the issue of the unfettered power that police officers have. And so the lack of convictions for these murders, whether it's Laquan McDonald, Kiwan, and the list goes on and on and on. I have heard for years, I've heard Judge DeFantis and Heidi Ladd and these other judges say that I'm giving this 20-year and this 50-year sentence to you to serve as an example. You're going to be an example to the rest of the community of what will not be tolerated here in this community. When will a officer who abuses his or her power or who kills somebody, when will they be sentenced to an outrageous sentence? And so that we can set an example of what will not be tolerated by the police in our community.
That's Alderman. Yeah. Thank you for that. That's Alderman Aaron Ammons. When we come back, we'll wrap up this conversation with Gerard McClendon. Alderman, thanks for taking the time to join us.
Thank you for having me. Take care.
You're listening to The 21st. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. All this hour, we've been talking about the 7 deaths we've experienced this week, 5 police officers yesterday evening in Dallas. During a protest for people who had come to protest the deaths of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile, two men who were fatally shot by police officers earlier this week in Louisiana and Minnesota, staff on Facebook says, "I was struck by how much coverage of Castile's death focused on who he was to his community and what he meant to those who lost him. The coverage looked normal. I've become so accustomed to media coverage looking for some deviance to fit the narrative of a black man's death. Is this an outlier, or will we continue to hear about the lives of those who have died?" Gerard, as we wrap up this conversation, just last thoughts from you about where we go from here. What do you want people to be talking about, thinking about?
You know, in the United States, we have to start looking at something as simple as murder being rare. Murder should be rare. If you polled 100 people, only one or two of those people should know of anyone that's ever been murdered, if any at all. You know, so we have to work on eradicating murder. We have to start de-escalating conflict. We have to lose our arrogance. I mean, you know, the Texas incident is somewhat ironic, too, because it's like everything's, you know, their arrogance in Texas is that everything's bigger in Texas. Our churches are bigger. You know, our municipality is bigger. In Texas, we don't have income tax and we love our guns, you know, but just 53 years ago, you know, we lost a great man in Texas, that being John F. Kennedy. So we've got to lose our arrogance. And I think something crucial is knowledge of self and purpose. I mean, when people get back to the knowledge of self, they won't do things that are destructive to the rest of society. A few quick things. Micro cameras in neighborhoods, we have to institute. We've got to put a ban on assault weapons. We've got to get our judicial system together so the sentencing is more specific. Something that I'm experimenting with is a $5,000 tax refund for immediate families that have no violent or murderous activity. And we have to have more sensitive policing in a free society.
That's Gerard McClendon. He's the host of Counterpoint on Lakeshore Public Media, where I'm sure you can hear more about those things that he just outlined. Gerard, thank you for taking time to talk with us this morning.
Thank you so much, Nyla. Have a great day.
The Zika virus has been making headlines all year long. Front Page News reports back in January showed photos of children in Brazil born with microcephaly. That's a serious disorder characterized by unusually small heads and brain damage. Both the CDC and the World Health Organization have since confirmed that the disorder is linked to the Zika virus, which is spread by mosquitoes but can also be sexually transmitted. Joining us now to talk about the virus is New York Times reporter Donald McTeal Jr. He's the author of the new book, Zika, The Emerging Epidemic. Donald, thank you for being with us. Welcome to the 21st.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
I think we should just start with a very basic question, because I think there's been a lot of misinformation out there about Zika. What are the sort of the top three things everyone needs to know about the Zika virus?
That it is generally a mild disease and not harmful to 99.9% of the people who get it, but that for pregnant women, it can be absolutely devastating to the fetus. The baby may die in the womb, or may be born with birth defects that are, you know, blindness, deafness, serious brain damage, so that the baby may never be able to walk, to sometimes even to swallow. Some babies die in the first week of life. So, it for most people it's mild, but pregnant women have to do everything they can to avoid getting it.
We know this word microcephaly. It simply means small head, but it is a serious disorder. What happens when a baby is born with microcephaly?
I mean, that is it. The baby is born with a tiny head. I think most people have seen the pictures that came out of Brazil. I mean, they've confirmed almost 2,000 kids with true microcephaly, probably almost, well, clearly caused by Zika, although you don't always find the virus in the baby when it's born. And lots of other babies have died as a result. So it means that basically that the virus during the mother's pregnancy, the virus gets through the placenta and it tends to attack the neurons, the cells that are going to grow into what becomes the brain. And if you look at ultrasounds of babies, of baby growing babies' brains, you suddenly see these white spots where cells have died, and then you see holes begin to open in the brain, and ultimately you see that the brain stops growing. And because the brain isn't growing, it isn't pushing out the skull of the baby, and so the baby is born with a tiny skull, but even inside that, you see an even tinier brain. It's quite terrifying when you see the ultrasounds.
And just to focus on the facts, what are the chances we know if a woman has Zika and is pregnant or becomes pregnant, what are the chances that she'll have a baby that's born with microcephaly?
Well, the danger is getting Zika during the pregnancy. If a woman has Zika now when she's not pregnant, she will almost undoubtedly have a mild disease. She'll recover from it. She'll have antibodies, and it'll be as if she's vaccinated against it. She will be. We don't know how long the immunity lasts, but it seems to be pretty strong immunity. It's like having measles or chickenpox or smallpox used to be in the old days. The disease could be quite dangerous, but actually the closest example is German measles. German measles was a pretty mild disease. It's called rubella. You get shots for it now. It was a mild disease. The mothers didn't suffer from it very much, but the babies could be born with serious birth defects, could be born blind, could be born deaf, or could die in the womb.
And so, does it matter, Donald? Does it matter at what point? If the woman is past her first trimester, do we know enough about babies and the baby development and the Zika virus in terms of at what point it may be a problem?
The first trimester appears to be the worst, but women have been infected in the third trimester, not too long before they were due, and the babies have died. And been stillborn. So the microcephaly danger of a baby being severely, visibly damaged is mostly linked to the first trimester, but there's no safe time.
Donald, I think that rubella analogy is an interesting one because I wanted to ask you, you've been a science reporter, you've covered this issue for some time. Are you surprised at the level of coverage that's happening around Zika? And maybe you're not surprised by the misinformation that's out there as someone who's a science reporter, but just the level of coverage of this, I'm curious your perspective on that.
Well, I know there's a lot of misinformation out there. I spent a lot of my time in the beginning of this epidemic trying to squelch rumors, trying to, explain that no, it's not caused by the genetically engineered mosquitoes. No, it's not caused by, a pesticide or a larvicide that's put into drinking water in Brazil. It wasn't just a big mistake, a big undercount by the Brazilians. It wasn't caused by vaccinations or anything like that. It's caused by the Zika virus, and there's now tons of evidence that it's caused by the Zika virus, and there's historical precedent for it. There are other viruses that do this. Cytomegalovirus does this. The herpes virus, if it's gotten in the middle of a pregnancy, can sometimes do this. Industrial poisons that can make their way through the fetus and through the placenta can do this. What we've got now, what's unusual about this is that it's a mosquito-borne virus. So, mosquitoes will bite everybody, and you can't know when they're going to happen. It's very hard to protect yourself against mosquito bites, for 24 hours a day for 9 months. So.
We're speaking with Donald McNeil Jr. We're gonna tweet out, by the way, a link to an article you wrote, as you mentioned, for the New York Times about some of those rumors. So follow us on 21st Show to see that. Donald, in your book, you give readers an inside look into what was happening in the media and among public officials as news of Zika was beginning to break. You write about the World Health Organization and the CDC being slow to report about the outbreak. And then there were mixed messages about travel advisories to Latin America and the Caribbean. Why was there a delay?
Well, the CDC, I mean, I was the CDC, it wasn't, there was a lot of confusing reports out of Brazil in the beginning. It was a while before Brazil figured out what was going on. It was a while before they, why these babies, or even the suspicion that the babies had been caused by this disease and the microcephaly. But once it became clear, I was getting lots of phone calls myself, here at the Times from pregnant women wondering whether or not they should go to the Caribbean or whether or not, whether they should go on their baby moons. And I kept asking the CDC, when are you guys, are you going to issue a travel alert? When are you going to do it? And they need to get their ducks in a row with all their partners, which is to say other countries, because when you issue a travel advisory, countries, it destroys the tourism industry. And so they were alerting Mexico and Brazil and every country from basically south of Florida to say, hey, look, we're going to have to issue this advisory. And they were also deciding exactly what the advisory was going to say and what level alert it was going to be. So it was an advisory originally just for pregnant women, not for anybody else. Now it's been expanded to be pregnant women and anybody who's having sex with a woman who is pregnant or might be pregnant.
And the CDC, if you can remind us of the guidelines for how long people should wait in terms of having unprotected sex and being worried about the Zika virus, what are the CDC guidelines about that?
For a couple in which the woman is pregnant, they should avoid, if the woman should stay away from Zika transmission areas, and if the man has been in Zika transmission areas, they should avoid unprotected sex for the entire length of the pregnancy. If the man has had obvious symptoms of Zika virus, they should avoid sex, according to the CDC, for at least 6 months. That's because it's known that the virus can get into the semen, presumably into the testicles, and can persist there. It's known to last there for 2 months. And to be extra cautious, the CDC triples that and says, you know, avoid it for 6 months. They have said wait 8 weeks if the man has no symptoms, but now that we're seeing cases where men didn't have any symptoms and yet managed to transmit it to their spouses, the guidelines are probably going to be 6 months for everyone.
Right, because at one point the Canadian health officials had different guidelines as well, right? Which probably makes
and
things
British,
confusing.
And the British, things don't all happen at exactly the same moment.
So I wanted to ask you, which adds to the confusion, I wondered if we could talk for a minute about the strategies that researchers and public health officials are pursuing to combat the epidemic. Some researchers are working on creating a vaccine. There are strategies with the mosquito eradication. We're seeing public health officials in some places saying women should delay pregnancy. Do you have a sense of which is likely to be most effective? Or in a situation like this, do we have to be doing all of these?
Well, everything needs to be tried, but we know a couple of things. We know that a vaccine is not going to be ready for at least 2 years. Doctors, you know, vaccine makers say it's not going to be that tough to make a vaccine, but you have to test a vaccine incredibly carefully, especially if you're thinking of putting it into healthy pregnant women, because you do not want anything to go wrong, and things have gone wrong with vaccines before. Mosquito control is being tried very hard, but this is, you know, I cannot get a single public health entity to show me a city anywhere in this hemisphere where they have successfully said, our women are safe, don't worry, we've eliminated the mosquitoes. And Puerto Rico has got the CDC directing the efforts, and they're doing everything they can, and yet hundreds of thousands of people are being infected in Puerto Rico because mosquito control doesn't work very well with Aedes aegypti. It's a mosquito that likes to live in your garden, will even breed in your shower drain if it can, and really likes biting people. And
it's a day-biting mosquito, right? So, yeah, it's not sort of the traditional, what everyone thinks of when they're thinking about malaria and other sort of typical mosquito-borne illnesses that people have been used to.
Right.
Donald, you said you...
And not getting pregnant is definitely a way to avoid having birth defects. That's one thing that does work.
One last question for you. You said you'd be open to traveling to Brazil to cover Zika during the Olympics. We're seeing a lot of questions about that now. You're not concerned, obviously, because you're not pregnant. You don't plan on getting anyone pregnant. Right. So what worries you personally more? What worries you more personally than the Zika virus?
Me personally, I don't really worry about it. I guess as a man over the age of 50, I'm a candidate for getting Guillain-Barré syndrome, but you know, I could get Guillain-Barré syndrome at any time. There's always a small risk of it. So this is not a disease that I've worried about compared to lots of others. But, you know, if I were pregnant or having sex with somebody who was trying to get pregnant, I would be that would be a whole different situation. So for other people, it's something that's got to be taken very seriously. And for people traveling to the Olympics, you know, pregnant women should avoid it. And anybody who's having sex with a woman hoping to be pregnant or pregnant should be very careful to avoid infecting them. And that means months of care. And that's hard to do because people aren't used to thinking about using condoms when they're pregnant. It's just, you know, it's...
And for 6 months, you're saying, or the entire pregnancy.
The entire pregnancy.
Yeah.
It's hard to convince people of that message. I mean, you know, you put that on a poster in the subway and people scratch their heads and go, why would a pregnant woman use a condom?
That's a good point. That's Donald McNeil Jr. He's a science reporter for The New York Times. His new book is called Zika, The Emerging Epidemic. Donald, thanks for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
That's all the time we have for today. All of our past shows, ways to contact us, provide feedback, are on our website, www.21stshow.org. We're produced by Christine Herman and Travis Stansel, with assistance from Howla Delahi and Ben Thomas Payne. Technical direction comes from Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our news director. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Stay tuned. NPR News is going to continue to update what we know about the shooting in Dallas last night, so stay all day. We'll have the latest on that. Thanks for listening. Have a good weekend. Stay safe.